Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month, we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at zmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at zmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning. Hope you're all well. It's good to see you all. Some new faces too. Today I wanted to talk about questions arising out of a case koan from the Shishin's Book of Equanimity here. Written back in the 13th century, case 30, Dai Sui's Kalpa Fire. Preface to the assembly. It extinguishes all relatives and cuts off duality. To break off the ball of doubt, what phrase can be adopted? Choan is not more than a tiny step away. Taizen's great weight is only 3 pounds. Tell me, according to what principle does one speak thus? The main case, attention. A monk asked Daizui, in the raging of the Kalpa fire, chiliocosms, that means 10,000 universes, together destroyed. I wonder if this is destroyed or not destroyed. Daizui said, destroyed. The monk asked, if so, does everything go with it? Dai Sui said, everything goes with it. The same monk later asked Ryusai, in the raging of the Kalpa fire, chiliocosms are together destroyed. I wonder if this is destroyed or not destroyed. Ryusai replied, not destroyed. The monk asked, why is it not destroyed? Ryusai replied, because it is the same as the chiliocosms. And the appreciatory verse, destroyed and not destroyed, everything goes with it. Chiliocosms. The phrase didn't function as a hook and chain at all. The feet with brambles are hindered greatly. Understood and not understood. The crystal clear matter, so long-winded. Those who know when taking it up shouldn't barter. In my story, whether to buy or sell is up to you. Okay, so let's just wipe all that away, you know, to start off with, because it's not a story about the future, really. And it's not a story about the past either. You know, this is a nice story. It agrees with science, you know, is that at some point the earth's going to be destroyed when the sun starts to grow and get, you know, whatever it does. And then the universe is meant to end. But that, you know, how does that apply to me now? I mean, this is a question that I hear from many students from different traditions, etc. But what is this? You know, it's kind of interesting going back a few years. I had a student called Kevin Riley, Rakuzan, who was dying of cancer. And he actually gave a talk on this koan when he was dying. And it was very important to him as a human being. He gave one of the best talks that I've ever, you know, ever heard about that. On this particular subject. So why was that important to him? You know, it's like for many people, existing is important. You know, living is important. Death quite often spurs people to practice. The thought of death, the thought of change even, gets people to you know, look into their own nature. You know, the Buddha himself, when you know, when before he was enlightened, had a basic question. And that basic question, why is there sickness, old age, disease? And then seeing somebody who exhibited, somebody who was looking into the human condition, a monk came by. And that stimulated him to practice, because he hadn't seen somebody who dedicated themselves to practice. Maybe he saw the forms of that in that person, or an attempt to do that in that person. A lot of, say, kids when they're, say, 16, 17, 18, maybe as early as 13, start to come across this impermanence and see that childhood is ending. And that part is moving away. And a lot of fear may arise in those, you know, in those times. All the things that have been relied on at that point are falling off. And an uncertain future faces us. One person, you know, who was practicing was saying, I've got to look at impermanence a little bit more. You know, yeah, look in the mirror. You know, you don't need to look at this thing called impermanence anymore. You don't need to look at this thing called death anymore. That's inherent in our, you know, in our own being right from the beginning. To be born is also knowing that at some point there will be death. You know, it cracks me up that people are looking at ways of avoiding death after, you know, I don't know how many thousand years people have been meditating and stuff like that, and et cetera, but people are still looking at ways of avoiding death. Can that be done? I don't know of anybody that's done it. I've heard of stories, but is that possible? So then we look at this story that agrees with science. So sometime the universe expands to a certain point, everything is destroyed. It all goes. But is this destroyed? You know, that's an important thing. I remember when I look back, and you know, my memory isn't the best thing these days, and hasn't been for a while. And I always remember my Zumi Roshi saying, I don't talk much about my teachers because it's just lies, you know. I don't know how it was at that point. But, you know, I look back at my own development as a human being. There was nothing until I was about 18 months old. And then I had my first memory of sitting on my grandfather's knee in the car driving. You know, those were in the days before political correctness. And it seemed like I was having a good time. You know, I don't know at that point. It was just a direct memory. That's it. Nothing else. There's no emotional content. And then over the years from that point is when those memories began to, you know, like glue together and become something more constant. But it was based on, this vast and empty aspect, which was there before any kind of memories existed. When I look into my own nature at this point in time, that vast and empty is always at the bottom. That's where everything comes from. And I can rely on it. I can implicitly rely on it. That no base that Master Kyozen talks about in one of these koans too. You know, so what does that mean to us? You know, again, is if we look at motivations, is that what does this mean to us? Does that mean a lot if we're, you know, we're going to be destroyed at some point in time? You know, I mean, obviously, we talk in this koan about the relatives. All the relatives it extinguishes all relativities, not relatives, relativities, and cuts off duality. You know. Is that so? You know, is that really true? This koan that you just said, when it's all destroyed, does that cut off all relativity? It looks like it does. It really does. When you look at, you know, this unfixed base that we are, does that cut off all relativities? Yeah, to a greater degree, it does. It depends on what we can conjure up, what story comes up in our own mind of how we place things in the world around us. In that respect. So how do we use something like this as a as a stimulus to practice. For me, is I wanted to see the bottom line. I wanted to see what was at the bottom of all of this. You know, because as soon as that was realized, is that then living was a lot easier. There's always that context, you know. There's like, I remember talking with Maizumi Roshi about this koan. And he said in the early days, he was going, yeah, at some point everything will be destroyed. But there'll still be something that practices. That's a very important point. There is still something that practices. And then later, after he went to the I think it was like Global Summit on global warming and pollution at Rio in the 90s, he said, you know, I didn't really worry about that, but it really would be nice to have some people to teach. You know, if there's nobody left, it's not much fun, is it, on that level? I mean, all of the dramas that come from being alive, all of the depth and the breadth of all of the communications, relationships that we have, you know, all of those destroyed. Look at what we can do to help our own planet and the people around us. And that's implicit in this particular koan. The thing that you'll see is that you have the monk who's going, well, does this go along with that? Basically what he's saying. So all of these universes all on the outside being destroyed, is there something left on that? You know, is there really something left with the destruction of everything? So we look at that. You know, these are things that we can do. You know, and I'm kind of loath in many ways to say, well, you know, you should look at your carbon footprint and the cars and use all of this stuff in ways that really help the planet. Yeah, do what you can with that. And at the same time, is see that connection that we have with the people around us, with the planet, with the decisions that are made around those things. Get involved and active along those things. But at the same time, is that, you know, we are affected directly by everything that's happening in this environment that we're in. It doesn't matter if somebody screws up, then we have the opportunity to fix it, or we let it go in that way. There's responsibilities that we have to one another. We have the connections, you know, we talk about Indra's net in Buddhism, where, you know, if something's felt on one side of the net, it's felt on the other side of the net. Just like in a spider web, a spider comes from a long way when he feels something pulled on the other side. We're at the effect of those things, and we affect the things around us in all these different ways. Now, then studying our own lives and seeing how those things operate, you know, we talk about, say, dying the great death. You know, Hakuin would say, die now. And I don't mean this physically. He'd say, die now, and you'll never have to die again. You know, so see that, why is that so? It's that, let it all go. Drop off all these ideas, notions, and beliefs, and really realize this thing that is at the base. And then when you come back from that, then you see this connection. And then that's a wondrous way to live, because it's not then self-based. I'm going to avoid this because it might cost me something. I'm going to avoid this simply because it's too much work. You see that we all stand together. We're connected in that baselessness right from the beginning. And that's a wonderful thing. You know, and yet for many of us, we start to go, well, this will happen to us in the future, but look into your own nature. How much do you really know? You know, this and that vast and empty or destroyed is with us right from the beginning, but we fail to grasp that. For many people, it's frightening. I remember when I first started practicing I used to sit a lot on my own at my house because I didn't know of any centers. And I remember probably after about five, 6 months of practice is that the absorption in thought began to, you know, the clouds began to sort of dissipate. And I realized, you know, intellectually that there was no base to all of my stories that I was telling myself. You know, they had very little to do with this moment in time. And I was creating something that was an illusion. And it scared the crap out of me. It took another, you know, few months until I really saw that I lived whether I thought or not. You know, so I don't really trust that Descartes, I think, therefore I am, you know, in that way, is that, you know, you don't think, you are not. You know, these things are with us. We don't need to think to live. We are already a being in our own right that includes everything else that's around us. You know, so you look at this. So other examples of this baselessness is that what happens when you go to sleep? Now, in this is, I am acknowledging the fact of dreams. I'm acknowledging the fact, but when there are no dreams there, where do you go? Are you unified with the rest of this universe that is around us? You know, I don't need to think, well, when I go to sleep, am I going to wake up in the morning? Some people worry about that, though. Yes, so what? It's a good way to go, isn't it? You know, go to sleep, die, there you go. You know, as a Buddhist, you may be rewarded. Here we go. You may be rewarded. You may come back as, fill in the blank, you know, like a dog or something, you know. But no, I'm saying, you know, where do you go? Where does that happen? That erasure of one's basis of personality type, of thought process, of relating to, is all gone at that point. And then the interesting thing is you wake up in the morning. And then, you know, I think maybe some of you have had that experience where you wake up and you don't know who you are, or where you're going. You know, and then things then begin to fall back into place. And this is natural simply because, you know, that we are at the basis unwritten. Those things that come later are secondary, all of the descriptions that we have around ourselves. And they're very good tools. That's how we bond together, you know, or create enmities. That's the other aspect that occurs there. But again, is that we come back to this thing. How does that feel when, if you feel all of this is to be, you know, going to be destroyed? In fact, sometimes, you know, I've heard it said, live your life as if you're going to die the next moment or die the next day. What does that mean? But it's a very important exercise to do for us as human beings. What is most important to you? You know, and, you know, everybody's got answers to that, from the most flippant to the most profound. We all have answers in one way or another. But what really satisfies you? You know? Now, this is important because this is a very human kind of a desire. What really satisfies you in terms of living? What's most important? Going back to another student of mine who died early 2000s, he had leukemia. He was a policeman in Palm Springs. And he really went deeply into his illness. And one day, you know, I was actually going through a divorce at that time, so it must have been around 2000 or something. And, you know, so I was struggling, and I would go off and see him at the hospital down in Palm Springs. And he would say things to me like, hey, Tenshin, he goes, don't sweat the small stuff. And then he would say, it's all small stuff. You know? So that was one of them. And then just before he died, he said to me, you know, he goes, Tenshin, what you and the Buddhas and all those ancestors have been telling me is really true. Just this is it. And I can say that in amongst the flaring of my leukemia. And he would say flaring, it was like, it just feel like, you know, fire going through his veins. And he could say, just this is it. Now, you imagine other people that are trying to avoid that and how they go through that kind of thing, knowing that their existence is going to finish. You know? Another person I went to was dying, and they were saying, you know, I wish I could get back with my partner, you know, and I'm kind of going, you know, you really don't have, you don't really have much, very long to live, and that is so important to you in that way. Because again, is that there's that aspect of denial. In one level, it protects us from looking into the depths of our own being. But part of looking into the depths of our own being, which is the basis of Zazen, is that we're going to see things that we like and things that we dislike that scare the crap out of us and take us to the highest of joys of knowing that life in itself is so valuable and that we're connected to everything else in whatever way. So we come back to that. So, you know, this story of what's going to happen in the future, which, you know, I mean, for the Earth, several billion years before it burns down. So, you know, I'm immortal on that level, on that one level. But as we know, that ceasing to exist can happen at any given time. So then what do we do about it? You know, I can't tell myself a story about that. Life is always like this. It is always baseless in that way. But faced with that extinction, what do you do? How do you live? You know, obviously this was important to this monk at that time. And I'm sure it was pretty important to many people. But so he asks the teacher, which is a big mistake in the first place. He goes, Daisui just goes, it's destroyed. He's very straightforward. It's destroyed. Does it go along with it? It goes along with it. It's destroyed, like that. Now, the problem is if he believes him, you know, if the monk believes him. Because then it becomes a thing. It becomes part of the curriculum that I'm learning. And I can hold on to this. You don't want to hold on to that stuff. See if it's true for you. Does that really feel right? Like when you go to sleep at night, is it all destroyed? It's destroyed. Dreams may come up and they go back to that unwrittenness that is at the basis. And then he goes to another teacher. Now, this is getting a bit more real because this means something to him. He wouldn't bother with it if this didn't mean something to him. So he goes off to see, Ryusai. Good memory. Goes off to see Ryusai and asks him the same question. He goes, it's not destroyed. Okay. So you can imagine now as well, he said this and he says this. You know, there's a duality right there. He says this, he says this. And he goes, well, does the 10,000 universes, the chiliocosm, I love that word. It's about the only time I use it, chiliocosm. You know, he goes, is that destroyed? He goes, it is destroyed. Does this go along with it? Yes, it's destroyed. It's not destroyed, sorry. Why? Because it's the same as the 10,000, the chiliocosm in that respect. The same as. Again, is that, are you separate than this universe? Are you separate than the world around you? Have you experienced that sense of being one with the people around you in whatever way? Where you're living as, you know, one body. It's like sometimes in the Zendo, you feel like unity of what we call Joriki or group Joriki, the strength of Zazen. Sometimes you're in maybe a concert and you feel the unity of the crowd in those ways. Maybe you're just in amongst your environment and just feeling the basic connection that we are right from the beginning. Or feeling somebody on the other side of the room, they cut themselves and, oh, or you feel it. We are connected whether we like it or not in that way. Destroyed, not destroyed. Are you separate than that? Is it something where you look at the destruction of the universe rather than feel it intimately in that way? And this is the basis of koan study. Rather than observing something and being able to comment on it, be it, be that destruction, be that vast and empty that is there right from the beginning. You know, whether it's destroyed or not destroyed, that is the basis of it. You know, it's kind of interesting. As soon as I start talking about this, you know, you feel a veritas or a gravitas that comes down amongst people. Yes, I'm facing up to the great matter of life and death. On one level, what does it matter? We come into this life and we leave this life. But what is far more important is how we live it. Have I really lived in accord with the talents that I am? Have I lived in accord with the truth, the inner truth that is possessed right from the beginning? It's far more important. Not what people think of me from the outside. You know? If you follow that, then, you know, boy, you're on a patent place of ups and downs that you're gonna be on a big graph. Your big graph of up and down. But if you really see, have I really lived to the best of my ability in the midst of this? Can I live with these decisions that I've made? This is the key of Buddhism. But you can do that if you see that bottom line. You know? If you don't, then quite often there is a movement from this basic freedom, which is this vast and empty, this unwritten aspect that we are on a momentary basis. And then when difficulties come, quite often we turn away from our own truth. So, you know, then what do we do about it? If this is important to us, is that go back to that core of Zazen, which is looking into our own nature. You know, you may find nothing there. Well, that's fair comment. That's good. You may find all kinds of things that block the direct access to that on a momentary basis. If you trust in a method, for the time being, just place thought on one side and come back to really being, practice being in itself. Then you're not practicing thinking. If you practice thinking, you'll end up with thinking. If you practice direct experience of this and looking into this, then that's what in time will be your basis of contact and interaction with this world. And that really is not, that's not a thing of magic. That's a thing of just persistence and practicing that over and over. And when you're no longer taken away by, well, at the end of the universe, there will be this. And it's just like, right now, if this dies, if all of this goes, then what? What do I see? How do I experience? See, all of these koans from, you know, right from the beginning of koan study have been reflections of this one here. That's why it always says is to make unevenness even. Now, in conversations that we have with people, it's just a similar way. What are they talking about? What is that basis of relationship that we are talking about here? How are people saying this? Where are they coming from? It's that same basis of koan. That's there because sometimes people talk in very abstract or obscure ways. And it's quite revealing once you're, that's where they're coming from. And of course, you know, as in koan, it takes a little bit of effort and energy to do that. But, you know, again, in time is that getting on the same page is really a worthwhile endeavor for us as, you know, for us as human beings. I'm getting towards the 30-minute deadline, so we'll see if there's anything extra into this. So it is kind of interesting. I think Tendo Wanshi, who's doing the prefaces and stuff like that, says, who's saying similar things to what I was saying, to break off the ball of doubt, what phrase can be adopted? So, you know, that's what we need to do. If there is doubt there about our own existence or whatever is going on, that's exactly the place to address. That's where growth is. It's not with staying in the known aspects of our own being, you know. Like when the unknown comes up, really look into that, really see that, bring it out to the surface. Don't immediately go, well, I understand that. You know, I'm a practitioner that's practiced for 10 years. Got it. I'm good. You know, look into the unknown. That's the place where growth comes from. And again, you know, then he says, tell me, according to what principle does one speak thus? Yeah, I mean, you have to look at that. I mean, I can't say anything about that. Is that what really interests you in terms of practice? That's exactly the principle to look at, the principle to clarify and to bring out to the surface. You know, we say what is, you know, practice in everyday life is obviously there is the basis of objective awareness. And the second part is there is the basis of immersion, losing oneself in that process. The thorough interaction with our environment in that way. And then when the difficulties come up, how do I really want to live? What is the most important for this? Rather than the most convenient, but what is the most important? In this, you know, in this case, he goes, this phrase didn't function as a hook and chain at all. I mean, that's one of the things that these koans are about. Something hooks you at some point, which you have to do for yourself. We're not told in this particular koan whether this monk goes beyond that. You know, he might have just given up and gone, well, he's saying it's destroyed. He's saying it's not destroyed, so this isn't much of a place. None of them even know the basics of it, you know, so I'm out of here. So you could say that's not the hook, you know. But and we don't know what happens again after with this monk is he might have gone, you know, I've really got to see this for myself. I can't rely on anybody else to do this. This has got to come from me. The, you know, the only koan that really grabbed me is that I passed it with four different teachers, but I didn't pass it with myself. And so then I worked on that until there was a breakthrough in my own life. And I was satisfied with that at the end of it, you know, and that is really worth it. It's not the matter of going through, you know, 750 koans or more, you know, just one's enough. So anyway, I just want to open it up for any questions or comments and we'll go from there.
You're now able to use the raise hand function if you'd like to ask a question. Thomas?
Hey, Thomas.
I should thank you.
Yeah.
I'm moved to tears. Mm-hmm. Your talk on this koan. I'm not one for superstition usually, but this is a koan that created a profound effect on me while working on only a few weeks ago with you.
Yeah.
Joe Karoshi. And I think it's, yeah, like you said, sometimes a koan hooks you. This koan,
yeah, yeah.
You hook me. And I think it's extraordinary in the sense that you're giving this talk now because on this very day, it's the 17th anniversary of my mother's passing.
Yeah.
And also the second anniversary of my nephew being born, so what would have been my mother's first grandchild, and I don't want to say, but thank you. I don't know anything about the causes and conditions that brought you to discussing this koan today, but
yeah, it was for you. Yeah. Oh, and thanks for sending me that video of that 12-year-old bass player.
Crazy.
No, what I'm saying here is that wonder of life is going on. That appreciation, you know, in the midst of knowing we will die and knowing there's birth, is always here in one way or another. Q.
If there are questions in the room, you're welcome to raise your hand.
God, that's a killer, isn't it? Kill the conversation.
Oh, okay. That's a question. So yeah, this is a subject I have some experience with, isn't it?
Yeah.
When I was 21, in 1991, I was diagnosed with HIV, which back then was, you know, be dead 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And I believed it. And I was going to go off and become an engineer, curtail those plans. It's been very interesting because through my 20s, you know, I had a partner, stayed in that relationship. It was a hot mess. He died of liver failure and cancer. I was there when he died.
Yeah.
I was 25. And I saw that. I'm like, that's enough. This is not permanent. So by the time I was 28, I ordained as a Buddhist monk and started practicing the Tibetan tradition.
Yeah.
As a monk, lots of long retreats.
Yeah.
And kind of get to a place where I just got really fed up with the Tibetan tradition and the lack of support for Western monks. And came out the other side of that with some clear mandates from my path and my spiritual connections that I needed to learn how to, like, figure out my sexuality and figure out how to deal with people, because part of it was being really afraid of people and trauma in my past. That's a different story.
Yeah.
But so then I spent the last 8 years kind of exploring the intense pleasure side of the world. You know?
Yeah.
You know, with all the training, you know, going into these very exotic states of mind from drugs and sex and people and all these things. And did that until I moved down here. Continued for about 3 months down here.
Yeah.
And that life blew up. It's like a rocket, pieces all over the place. And so now I'm sitting here putting it back together. And so when you talk about this and you know, somewhere between life and death and pleasure and pain and joy and sorrow is this like little spot where I'm just sitting here and it's like, the birds are chirping, the sky is blue. And it's just sort of like it's this incredibly mundane, outrageously cosmic joke of, I look at you in the eye and it's like, you are.
Yeah.
Would you like to take a breath together?
What?
Would you like to take a breath together?
Yeah, sure.
So there's no question in that. I mean, I could ask the question, what am I doing in my life? What should I do? What?
Yeah, well, that's yours.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
The thing is, it just seems like just settling into this moment again and again with whatever.
Yeah.
Diverse experience of pleasure, and then finding that center point in the middle in experience.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've given a really good elucidation of the Buddha's path and what he did.
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't matter what you do if you don't appreciate this moment in time, is that you're screwed.
But my mind still really wants something to hang on to. It's like, just as long.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Yeah. You know?
I haven't found anything yet, you know. God. No, thank you. Yeah. Right, Tanya, you're on.
Hi.
Hey.
Yeah, my name's Tanya, and I'm calling in from Helsinki. And my brother Andrew is there with you. So
yeah, he's right next to me.
Yeah, that's wonderful to be here and be connected in this way.
Mm-hmm.
I thank you very, very much for your for your Dharma talk. I appreciate it. As you know, our dad died a few months ago, and I had this. It's been, I guess it's more of a comment more than a question, but I had this, you know, I've been trying to stay safe my whole life by trying to control everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, and after Dad died, it was like, I'm also been trying to get pregnant, and it was like this, like mitigates the grief of death and trying to control birth at the same time. And something around in January, something like a couple months after Dad passed away and the grieving really kicked in, it was like something snapped. Like, I just, in a really good way, too. And it was a strange feeling of, like, death is so permanent. You can't fix it. You can't go back. And it's somehow instantaneous and permanent all at the same time. And there's nothing I can do to control it. And what a beautiful teacher it's been to me somehow to let go. Like, I cannot go back.
Yeah.
I just can't fix this. I cannot control it. And so it was incredible time, and also several other things, but like, just, I finally, like, I asked myself, and I asked a friend at the time, like, what if I just lie down and stop? What if I just stop trying to?
Why not?
And it was just like this. And I've been sitting in this, and I'm still here.
You are, yeah.
It's just, like, it's some, yeah, it's kind of this sweet release somehow.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, when you face,
really spoke to me.
Yeah, when you face up to those things that you fear, it changes. You know, fear can become an ally. I remember, you know, my teacher, when I went through a period of intense fear for probably about nine months, and just before I broke through it, he said, "You know what fear is?" I said, "Yeah, I know what fear is." And he goes, "I said, well, you know, what is it for you?" And he said, "Fear's not being clear about something." And that struck me, you know, not in a, you know, an earth shattering way. It was something that I had to look into. And so then it was just like I paid attention to that fear. And then after a while, I realized it had no basis. And so when I went through that, but, it, you know, it was a proper, you know, dropping off experience. But when I went through it, it's that then fear became an ally for me. It's just like, well, look at this and see what it is. And instead of running away from it, it's just that that was a way I gathered my energy to go through things. You know, and that's a beautiful gift.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. You want to say hi?
Sure. Hi, Andrew. Hi, Deborah. I love you.
I was already crying before you spoke up, so it's not your fault. I love you.
Right.
Love you.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Tanya. Okay, anyone else? Yeah, Jordan's here.
Just something to throw in. So the deep sleep without dreaming, we're still here. Nothing's arisen. But then to realize that with our consciousness or with what's arising. Benefit? Purpose? Why not sleep forever?
It's like, that's all I'm saying, is that then that's an escaping of things. Like for myself, is that deep sleep is great, you know. And when I'm saying here, I'm saying it is like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like life is like a box of chocolates. No, it isn't on one level. But on another is, you know, you never know what you're going to do. And there's analogies. But all with that is what I'm trying to say is that when there is no subject and there is no object, there's nothing to fear about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people fear that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, yeah, and it's the same thing. It's like some people when they're sitting, is that then suddenly there's less thought.
Mm-hmm.
And it really frightens people in that way. And all I'm saying is that this is just a phase in living. Let it, you know, just experience it, see it as part of it, and then you move on. It's just like in the same way, like, you know, we're hearing here is that you party a lot, but then you've got no context on the against what. And as human beings, is that we get tired of that. We like variety. There's all kinds of things. And so it's like with the schedule, you know, as you do this, then you do this, then you do this. You notice where you're attached to things. And eventually you're the container. Oh, now I'm doing this. This is going on. Then there's this. Then there's this. It's not that avoidance of the next thing that's occurring. So life or that aspect of emptiness is like going to sleep. Now remember, hearing somebody on primetime TV saying that meditation was like this, and I'm going, oh God, why are they saying that? And it's just like later, yeah, it's true. So I had a similar reaction to that, but yeah, it's just a thing of tackling fear in a certain way. It is like.
It's interesting though that you say some people are really afraid of this, or all of us are at one point maybe. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is the less we remember about our sleep in the morning, the better we feel. The less dreaming, in a sense, you know. And waking up like this, you know, without anything in between, you go, oh, I slept great, you know. Well, so it's interesting in terms of this fearing of emptiness. Mm-hmm. It's,
all right.
Who's around to fear it? I don't know.
Good. All right, Daniel. Good seeing you, Dan. Where are you?
Thank you. Hey. It's good to see you. Where are you?
Yeah,
I was going to ask you, you said something about all koans have been a reflection of this one here. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could say more about that. And also, what you just said about the schedule and noticing where we have attachments to certain parts of the schedule, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Where we like this and we don't like that and we prefer this.
Yeah.
You know, just to look at that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's right in that koan, the great way knows no difficulty. It simply dislikes choosing. You know, from the standpoint of, you know, this is living, I can't choose something else, I'm alive. So when something fills that space, the preferences are the things that kind of spoil it. You know, oh, this is going to end. Or I'm looking forward to that coming now because this isn't quite as good as that. There's that comparison. Mm-hmm. Now, in the immersion of training, it's just like, well, this is what's going on now. Put all the attention here. And then now, okay, we're doing this and we're doing that and we're doing that. And just enter into one thing after another, in living.
Yeah, and sometimes those things are very difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
There's almost mm-hmm. a sense of, you know, if I think about it, and I'm telling myself, boy, this is a pain in the neck. This is not what I want to be doing. They're having fun over there But, you know, but there are moments where I'm just doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing else. And it's neither great nor does it suck.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that living becomes far more important than the contents. I can acknowledge I don't like this, but no, this is my life, so what do I do now?
Right.
Yeah. So I'd rather enjoy it than not, you know, put it that way, you know, in that level. What was the other part? You started with something, I did the second part. What was the first?
The first part was about all koans have been reflection
of
this one here. But, I mean, they're actually tied in somehow, the second part.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, it's that the koans really are there. Like, you know, you look at that simple koan, like, how do you stop the sound of a distant temple bell?
Right.
Like you like, so now how do you do that? How do I stop your voice? You know?
Good luck.
Yeah, you know, because even if I did that, I could still hear you. You know? It doesn't work. You know, but it's about now. It's a scenario that's about now. And the more that I did Cohen, the more it was about she can or just this. And so bring that Cohen into this, and then it was like with conversations, people would start talking about something, and then I'm allowing their voice in to see something about them. Not just what they're saying, but who they are. You know, so koans are all about that. They were never about something that I go through, you know. It was always about, you know, life. When I'm seeing people, is that I'm seeing them, you know, as they are at any given time, and then all of the other information from their voice and their body language that's coming in, all of those are koans, you know. And then, you know, like there's other koans, like, you know, somebody gets bitten by a snake, and you know, we feel that, you know, if somebody gets, I remember Nick being bitten, you know, you actually feel that kind of thing.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's good seeing you. We got a call sometime too, you know, I keep forgetting. I'll call him, but it's too late now, you know, or it's too early.
Okay.
All right.
I'll set that up for you. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, brother.
Take care. Right, Anyo, you're on.
Whoops.
Hey, you entered the destruction of the Chiliocosm there.
Yeah, right there. Yeah. Well, that was, I have several questions, but that question was my first one. Maybe Jose could answer this better than anyone, but I'm puzzled that Ryusei says that it's not destroyed because it's the same as the Chiliocosm, and yet the Chiliocosm is destroyed. I mean, it's just
he took the other side. There's the relative aspect of destruction. And then there's the absolute side, is you are that, you are the whole thing, the vast and empty aspect.
I see. So he's turning the tables.
Yeah, exactly. It's just two sides of the same coin in that respect.
Keeping the monk on his toes, so to speak.
Hopefully, yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking about the first time I had experienced grandparents' death and my aunt's death growing up, and somehow I didn't take them very personally. But I had a friend die, a boyfriend die. He was turning left on the Pacific Coast Highway at Three Archway late at night and had a head on. And I took it very hard. And I remember my first instinct, and this was also true when John F. Kennedy died. I had worked on Kennedy's campaign from the time I was 12 on. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, my first response was, can't I offer up my life instead?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, as time is so beautifully put.
Yeah.
It's done. It's a done deal. But that response was so instinctive to me. And it doesn't surprise me that the offerings today from all of you have been so utterly touching, and we've been touched.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this
it's
is
about
a
this.
Call.
It's about living. Yeah.
It's about this. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're all sharing it right now. So thank you for bringing this up. You know, it's funny. Mm-hmm. This is 30 in the Book of Equanimity. It's 29 in the Blue Cliff Record.
Close.
And so interesting how koans unfold as these conversations and these awarenesses.
Yeah.
Of of being. So, anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Deanne?
Okay, Deanne.
I keep seeing Judy raising her hand, so I'm wondering if Judy could go ahead of me.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen her, so.
Yeah.
Judy, wherever you are, you're on. I can't see you on this.
Hi there. The only reason I was raising my hand is because this is just my second time here and I didn't know the protocol. What is it to be next in line to say something?
Oh, you just... Oh, if you want to say, you just press the what do you call it?
The little
raise hands button on your and if not, yeah, exactly like Deanne's saying, you know, we one way or another we'll find you. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. So, first of all, a pleasure to be here. It's my second time here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm UKIPA, so I'll be practicing at UKIPA once they get that structure redone.
Nice.
Construction completed. But my question was this. This is the way I relate to that basic koan. And tell me if you agree. I mean, I think of the deathless is to trust in awareness. To me, that's central. And conscious awareness is permanent. So to trust in awareness, then there's no death.
Mm-hmm.
Does that relate at all to this koan that you read?
Yeah, it does. You know, there's that aspect that, you know, like you were saying, conscious or just basic awareness is constant, whether we like it or not. Yeah, and obviously seeing that that's not personal is extremely important, you know. Yeah, in that way, you know, living and dying is not personal. Yeah.
No. Thank you so much.
I can make it that way.
It's such a delight to find all of you people. You know, that's been my goal, is to find people with similar approaches toward life. It's not that easy to find people like
this. No, thank you. Yeah, it's good. It's good seeing you and hearing your understanding. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Right, Deanne. I can see the hand. Yeah. Just talk to the hand.
Seeing all of you is wonderful. Glad to be here. I've been doing so much traveling, and this just really feels like coming back to a center point. Thank you. I just wanted to share, it seems like most of the koans, the sutra, the identity of relative and absolute, just covers all of them.
Yeah.
And this one, more than any.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that, if I feel any fear or doubt, the verse of the Kesa just wipes that away, that the phrase, a formless field of benefaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I feel, and I feel that, and I feel like I'm amidst a formless field of benefaction all the time. Mm-hmm. There's nothing left to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'm experiencing life more and more with this practice. And when I say this practice, I mean the practice of being alive.
Yeah.
So thank you for this practice that gives me a structure, a form to.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, the most important thing is the appreciation, you know, but you should thank yourself for doing it. I accept that, you know, and that everyone here, but, you know, you have done a lot. Thank you.
No, I'll thank both of us then.
Okay.
All of us.
Yeah, extend it. Yeah.
We're all doing it.
The formless field.
We're all manifesting it together, which is just the beauty of living.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Right, Morningstar, you're on.
Good morning, everybody. All this discussion is very interesting about what's important to us and how we respond to things. Mm-hmm. I mean, even noticing just, so at 4 a.m., I see a picture of a baby calf, what they call coo, which is a Scottish cow. Well, absolutely adorable. I'm in love. Like, even 8 hours later, I'm in this love feeling. And then you guys come on, and I'm thinking about all the people I'm in love with, and Anya, with everybody. Touched me at the Koji Center, and definitely attachment here.
Yeah.
And then letting that go. But in terms of the death, it's interesting. And I've had a near-death experience, and that affects my attitude about death, too. And just sort of being here. But there's an interesting experience that I had when I thought my life was ending. Which was I was out adventuring and, here in the desert, got a lot of rocks and cactus, and I'm climbing up a wall, and the rocks are very scrambly, so I grab a handhold, and it crumbles. I grab another, it crumbles. And I was sort of stuck there at a moment. I was really very scared. I was close mm-hmm. to where the ridge was trying to get to, and it was somebody else up on a ridge that I was hiking with. But I was really at a point where I really didn't think I could do it. And it was that moment. It was that moment. It's like, oh, my gosh. So the first one was, okay, I didn't want to suffer landing on cactus or rocks. I was hoping that I could leave my body before my body hit.
Did you try?
And the other moment was, because my very dear friend, I call my sister, is my executor, and very close friend, that we have to deal with all this impact of me suddenly going. And she had recently lost her father, a mother-in-law, her dog of many years. And I did not want her to have to go through that. That was really my effort. Like, please, please. Give me the strength, to move on, for that reason. And I did, obviously, make out of that. But it is interesting what's important to us. And it's sort of like what Anya was saying, those deaths that are unexpected are the most painful. And I think that's because we have attachment still with those beings that go. So, just sort of, working with that, that and my desire, just that about death and being here, that there's that part of me that has a preference to not be here because of certain things, but I'm here and trying to make the most of it. And a lot of people say, well, I have the most zest for life than most people that they know. And I do experience life each day as if it was my last and try and make it of quality in my choices. I don't always make great choices, but try to make it the best I can.
Yeah, good.
So, and I only notice the only, like, that desire to live, that feeling that people are like, oh, I want to live. It was only when I was pregnant and had my daughter, and then she's been estranged from me, and then it sort of stopped. But so that's kind of interesting. So I'm just noticing those things that are important to me.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share that in case it can touch it, anybody's experience. And so that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, one of the things is that sort of interests me too is that I can still talk with these dead people, and I do. I talk with my dad and my mom, my Izumi Roshi occasionally. I try to leave him be because he was, he's very busy. But they don't answer, But where did they go? This is always a question. It's an unknown, but their presence can still be felt. I feel the presence of all of these people from the past. It's not that they've disappeared from everything. It's I had conversations with them. It helps. Whether it's real or unreal is irrelevant, because I can still talk with my dad. It's great. He just doesn't answer me. Yeah.
But I do too, but...
There's love there, you know?
Too, though.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.